It's nice to be amongst friends. But talking at the front's a bit terrifying, tell you the truth. Even though I'm not up here infrequently, I guess, but still get nerves. So one of the things that we kind of talked about a little bit when we were thinking about what was going to be on the preaching and the time coming up, was just kind of touching on some of the sort of the classic Christian belief stuff, and one of those was I think last week or week before on generosity and tithing. So just kind of not new stuff, but kind of if you think about it a little bit more like maintenance, like just a little, sometimes things need a little bit of tightening or a little bit of oil or just keeping on track of things, and maybe things have got a bit loose in the area or need a touch up or maybe it's completely new for you. So I think this is probably going to fit into that category a little bit. But preparing during the week, it's amazing how when you're looking at the scriptures, it kind of stares straight back at you. And suddenly, boom, your whole life is, or your life, that area of your life is like under the spotlight. So I'll be honest with you, I've struggled a bit this week with what I'm talking about. So just put that out from the start. So some time ago when I preached from Genesis and about the various separations that occurred at the fall, the four breakings, the four broken relationships. So the relationship between us and God was the initial one, the initial break, and that subsequently caused the breaking of relationship with us within ourselves, of us with each other, and us with the general created world around us. And in the garden, in the story of the garden, the devil came as a serpent. And that was his strategy, and that remains one of his key strategies, is breaking off relationship. He is the builder of walls. He is the one that's wants to bring a wedge in. He's the one that wants to separate and cause friction and division. In Revelation 12, talks about one of the names that the Bible gives to Satan is the accuser. He's the in the King James, the accuser of the brethren, the accuser of us, the accuser of people who follow Jesus, and it says I hadn't quite locked on to this, but it says that day and night before God, he is accusing us, which is insane, which is absolutely insane. I hadn't really known about this very much, but apparently there's this thing on Google search engine called My Activity. So you can go and log into My Activity and see exactly what you've looked at on your computer, on your search engine. Just like give you the time, give you the site, give you the time, give you the site, way back. And so I did that just to see what I looked at. It's pretty boring stuff. NZ Herald, Guardian. Yep. Anyway, but he's like that, but like about your whole life. He's your My Activity. He's your My Activity to God. He's standing there going, oh, well, Chris has done this, and he's done this, and he's done this, and he's done this. Have you noticed this? He's done this too. And he was doing that too. And so the whole purpose of him doing that is he's trying to cause a wedge. He's in there in front of God trying to cause a wedge, trying to get you separated from God. But the good news on that front is that the answer that God's going to give him is, nothing to see here. I'm having a look at it, and I can't see anything. Just move along, please. Move along. Nothing here. Nothing to see. Come on. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. But anyway, so that's the strategy of Satan is division, is getting in there, building walls, building barriers. And he obviously he works from the other side as well. He works on us to try and cause division between us and God. And probably that's the area that he's more successful. Definitely that's the area he's more successful. So he comes in, and another name of him is the father of lies. So he comes in and he just niggles away. He's just working away. Is God real? Is God all he says he is? Is God good? My one used to be, God doesn't like me. Like, I knew God loved me, but my one used to be, God doesn't like me. So just getting in there and just working with our weak spots and trying to cause division. So, yeah, Jesus is the opposite of that. Ephesians 2 says that he is our peace. He has made, he's the barrier destroyer. He's the one that's brought down the barrier. He's the one that brought down the barrier between us and God, and subsequently between us and each other. So that's kind of the negative space of what I want to talk about today. So today I got given the second half of Ephesians 4 and the first half of Ephesians 5 to talk from, but I'm trading in my Ephesians 5, and I'm taking the first half of Ephesians 4 instead. So maybe we can have that up on the screen so people can have some words to look at. I'm not going to read it all. So the bit that I... Ooh, it's quite hard to follow, isn't it? So basically the first three lines. As a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be humble, completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to one hope when you were called, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all, through all, and in all. Yeah. Yeah. It's about unity. Satan's work is division. Satan's work is separation. The work of God is about unity. I think when I think of unity, I think of ideology. I think, are we thinking the same stuff? Are we believing the same beliefs? Are we all on track here? Are we tracking along? Are we tracking together? But Paul's idea of unity is not maybe a bit of that, but Paul's idea of unity is relational. It's relational unity. It's not ideological unity. I think unity for me, as Paul describes it here, it's more like family, right? I had my children so I could be in relationship with my children. I didn't have my children to grow them up to be good, solid citizens, to be doing the right thing, or to be performing, to be elite athletes or great brains or anything like that. I mean, that might happen. I had children to be in relationship with children. I had my family to be in relationship with these people. If their place in my family depended on their behaviour, they would already have been gone. So ideology is black and white. It's in and out, right? And I think sometimes we're like that about belief as well, about our faith. ideologies in or out. You're black or you're white. Believe what I believe, or you're on the other side. But family relationship is about you're in. You're in, and then we sort out belief afterwards. We sort out ideology afterwards. So it seems to me, I get that about my family. If I get that about my family, God's like a much better version, right? He's the perfect version. So presumably it's so much stronger than what I have towards my own family, which is really strong. So it goes on. I don't want to read a lot in the middle here because that's not where I'm going. But it goes on to talk about the next little bit is about the gifts given. So to each of us is given a gift. We all have a purpose. We all have a part in this family. It's not some people have the part and some other people are passengers. Everybody has a part in this family. And the purpose of the part is for the building up of everyone. It's really cool. I think often we like the way to get up is to step on someone and or just, you know, try and promote ourselves like that. But in this version, the way is like if you push someone else up, then they're going to pull you up. So gifts for everybody. Everybody has a purpose. Everyone has a part in this relational unity that Paul's talking about. However, there's a big however. It doesn't just come by itself. It doesn't just happen. So if we slide back to the top again, I don't know, maybe Stu, if you just get the first four verses to start with, that might be helpful. I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you've received. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Really instructive words. Be completely humble, gentle, patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort. Paul's got a lovely, he does it over and over again. He's got this lovely, lovely turn of phrase. Like he's got his little list. The one body, one spirit, one hope, one Lord. Just these kind of lists, but also these ones. The be completely humble, gentle, patient. These lovely groupings, which as a bit of a word geek, I quite like. Certainly the Spirit needs to be in the middle. This is definitely a God thing. But God came, the idea of being in relationship is being in partnership. Part us, part Him. So the make every effort is the part for us. And the stuff that goes on about changing your mind, transforming your mind, and James talked about this a few weeks ago. So I don't want to go there. But where I want to go is to the end. So what is this every effort? What does this every effort mean? Yeah, sure, making some positive inroads into these things of being humble and gentle, being intentional about these things. But if we can jump down to the last two verses of the chapter, verse 31-32. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as Christ forgave you. So these verses for me are about offence. They're about the stuff that can be the grit or worse in our relationships, in our unity, the stuff that can get in the way of unity. In my Bible, the first half and the second half have different headings, but I think this all fits under unity. This is called the Instructions for Christian Living or something like that. But this is Instructions for Unity as well. So get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as Christ forgave you. Paul lists them like we're robots, like just turn them off. Come on, just turn them off. Just flick the switch on this bitterness and rage and anger. Just do it. Or you know, even I guess the other way, the humble patient stuff is, sometimes that can be really hard to turn on too, right? But we're not robots. Sometimes will is in there, yeah, for sure. Sometimes will's part of it, but sometimes offense just happens, right? If we lived in the way that if everyone around us was living in perfect gentleness and patience and stuff like that, there would still be offense. Even if everyone's intentions were good towards each other, offense would still be taken. Sometimes offense is given, but sometimes it's just taken. So, what do we do with offense? I can be easily offended, and that's my struggle during the week, is talking about offense and just getting easily offended. The impact of offense is wounds. The impact of offense is pain. Lurking underneath these negative emotions that Paul's talking about is wounding and pain. We used to take teams up to Fiji to do some stuff up there, and I went a few times, and one time I went up there, we decided to do a bit of work around the property that we were staying on, and so I thought I'd do some cutting of the long grass, took out the sickle, took out my island work boots, jandals, and well, you'd think your limbs would know where the other limbs were, wouldn't you? Really? Anyway, so while I was doing that, I sunk the end of the sickle into the heel of my foot, and it was just a small. It was just a small cut. It was painful at the time, but it was just a small cut. And I'd had cuts like this at other times, and they'd heal pretty quickly, but I didn't. I didn't know this, but in the tropics, things don't heal so fast. So it stuck around. And sometimes wounds of offence are like that. They look little. They can be just little holes in your skin, little cuts. But they just don't heal. They just don't seem, you know, what they should be. And sometimes we treat them. Only a house. There's always stuff that needs to be done around the house, and one of the things is rusty nails, right? And sometimes offense is like a rusty nail. What we can do is just like flick a coat of paint over top, and yeah, looks good. It's good, right? But then next year you've got to do it again. And eventually it starts degrading the paint around or working on the wood around it. And they're both really small things. They're just really small things. But they don't go away. They don't just go away. If there's a cut there, if there's a wound there, and it's a proper wound, it probably just won't go away. And I've got a wee story from my life. about a situation like this. So it was quite a while ago, probably about, I don't know, about 12 years ago, I suppose. And someone in a work situation said something which was not really directed at me at all, but it had real implications on my work performance. It was kind of the flip side of it seemed to reflect that I was not performing at work, and I kind of stung a bit at the time, and I didn't consciously think it was anything. And it was probably almost a decade later that I realized that over this period, my attitude towards this person had, I was always looking for a negative excuse. I was always noticing the little negatives about this person. I was always, whenever I talked to someone else, it would be slightly warming to me when they would notice something negative as well. And almost 10 years of just slowly festering away, just a little wound rotting away inside of me. And I wasn't, for me, that wasn't rage. It probably wasn't much anger either. But there's probably a bit of slander in there. And there was definitely bitterness. And after looking it up, I've discovered the meaning of malice is wanting ill for someone. Yeah, definitely, definitely. I was just like slipping a little lick of paint on it for 10 years, a little touch of paint every year, and it wasn't going away. There's some sort of broken logic, and I say that things that somehow if something goes wrong with that other person, that'll make it kind of better here. If that something bad happens to them, or if nothing goes good for them, then it kind of makes it better for us somehow. But it doesn't. It never works. It never works. So I guess that's kind of one end of the scale. And there's this lovely story in the, I don't know if anyone saw, I saw it on stuff, it might have been in the paper, about a guy whose son got murdered, a Christian guy. So that, I guess that's down the other end. But the impact is exactly the same. This festering wound in him, wanting revenge, wanting bad, wanting malice for these people who did this thing to him. These people who took his loved son away. And it just festered and festered within him. And he said his enjoyment for the things that he loved, his grandchildren, his sporting, his golf, all that went away because all he could see was his wound. All that mattered was this idea that the other people would pay. So make every effort. So I've got I don't think I've got the subject covered off by any means, but I've got a few things that I think might be helpful. Make every effort. What effort can we make? When I was going up, there's further, a little bit higher than this in the passage. There's the verse that says, "Do not let the sun go down on your anger," or something like that. When I was going up, that was kind of one of my family's mottos. That was a thing that our family lived by. And this kind of the idea that if there'd been friction, if there'd been offence in the family, that we would sort it out by the end of, before anyone went to bed, which it's funny now, like now I know a little bit about how the brain works. I'm not sure about that as an absolute as much as we did it then. Don't quote me on this, but I heard that a tired brain at the end of the day is about as functioning as a drunk brain. So, yeah. And sometimes we used to just battle it out in the middle of the night to try and get resolution. So not as an absolute, but maybe if you live by that, it's good. But don't leave it. Don't let it linger. If you've noticed a fence from the day, don't let it linger. If it's just small stuff, don't let it linger. I don't think you can brush off someone murdering your son in a day. I'm not suggesting that. But most of the offence that we deal with, most of the stuff that gets going in our lives, is little stuff. It's just day-to-day stuff. It's the grind. It's the grit. Don't let it linger. If you want to live by cleaning it up by the end of the day, awesome. If you want to leave it to the next morning when you're a bit fresher, awesome. But don't let it linger. You know, when a boxer gets a little cut on his face, when a boxer gets, you know, the other boxer puts in a, and gets a little cut, the other boxer then will go for that cut. Once the wound is there, wounds will hit it. It'll open up. The other boxer wants to get that opened up, get the swelling going, get the eye closed off. They want you not to see. When a cut is there and it's not dealt with, other stuff will hit it. Stuff that you would have all normally just brushed away will stick to it. More things will feel offensive than what you'd normally experience. Keep a clean slate. If you can, keep a clean slate. Deal with things quickly. Keep a clean slate. As Proverbs says, Proverbs 19, a person's wisdom yields patience. It is the glory to overlook offence. There's something in there about the spiritual realm as well. I don't know that much about that. I've seen it, it says once before. It says, do not give the devil a foothold. There's something about an open wound that attracts flies as well. So I don't want to touch on, I don't want to do too much on it because I don't know enough about that. The second thing is sharing with someone else about the pain of your wound. If the wound is stuck around, you probably need to talk to someone else about it. With the story that I told you about myself, that's what happened. I talked to someone that I trusted, and actually that it was really unprofound, really really unprofound. The only thing they said really that made a difference was, I can see how that would have hurt you. That sounds painful. And just in the process of getting it outside of my mind, getting it outside of my head, was enough for me to recognize, hey, this is stupid. This is really stupid. What am I doing protecting this? This is destroying this relationship that I've got. And that was enough for me to be able to let it go. Talk to someone else. Preferably not the person who's offended you. If you can help it, sometimes in close relationship you do that, but preferably not the person you've who's been the offender. So James 5 says, confess your sins to each other and pray for one another so that you may be healed. Maybe slightly different to the context of this, but kind of in that package. There's something powerful about bringing things out in the light. Often we play things in our head a lot, and sometimes, if we just take it to God, we're just playing it in our head. Sometimes I'm taking my wound to God so that he can help me, and all it ends up being is us praying in our heads, and actually it ends up being a bit of avoidance. We're not actually we're just keeping it secret between me and God. All the shameful, painful stuff, we'll just keep it me and you. So sometimes just the act of bringing it out in the light, telling someone else, it's getting it out there. This is no longer a me, this is in my head. Even if we are praying about it, it's no longer just in my head. It's out there. Somebody else knows about it. But having said that, the second part of that as well, pray about it. Wounds that have sat around for a while, deep wounds, need some work. Pain needs healing. Otherwise, it will breed these things. It will breed anger, irritation, malice. Go with God. Wrestle with your pain. Wrestle it through. No amount of saying you forgive somebody will sort it out if the pain is still there. Even if you have good intentions of forgiving someone, if you still have pain in your heart about the situation, you will still probably want ill for them. Take it to the Lord. His promise is he heals the brokenhearted. He binds up wounds. That's his promise. And the final thing that I don't want to say is position yourselves. Position for the things that you want. So this is in the context of unity. If we can keep that in mind, it's in the context of unity. If that's what you want, if you want good relationships, if you want unity, position yourself for those things. Position yourself intention yourself for these other things, the positive things that he talked about. Trying to be humble and gracious and trying to give love and encouraging people's giftings so that they can be a great part of this body. Forgiveness is a letting go, right? It's a letting go of the person, but it's also a letting go of your pain. And it doesn't mean that things go back to how they were before necessarily. I think often it strengthens relationships when you know that you can get through some difficult stuff together, or when you know that even if someone offends you, that you can get through it and still keep going with someone. That's a really powerful thing. But sometimes it does change the direction of a relationship as well. I want to be frank about that. I don't think forgiveness requires an apology from the other person. Even though it might happen, it's not a prereq. And forgiveness definitely doesn't require that you tell the other person they're forgiven, because often they won't even know they've offended you. So unless they ask for forgiveness, it's probably best not to tell them. Anyway, so there's loads more in the scriptures on forgiveness. It's one of the big topics, right? It's one of the key things. You know, forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. It's in the Lord's Prayer, or this parables and other stuff as well. So anyway, God's plan for us is unity. The devil rides from the back of offense. The devil rides in to your life. The devil rides in as a divider on the back of offense and unforgiveness, with the purpose of breaking relationship, of disrupting unity, keeping our hearts clean, and dealing with our wounds. Make every effort. And I think that's all I've got.